Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
An American and a South African hostage killed during a rescue attempt in Yemen, and Defense Secretary Turk Hegel in Afghanistan with an announcement. I'm Marty Johnson reporting from Washington. An American photojournalist and a South African teacher are dead, killed during U.S.-led rescue attempt today in Yemen. U.S. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel, speaking from Afghanistan, said American photographer Luke Summers and teacher Pierre Corky were murdered by their al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula captors during the attempted rescue. Gillian Parker reports for VOA from Johannesburg.
U.S. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel said the 33-year-old American had been under an execution threat since Thursday.
He was murdered during an attempt by American forces to rescue him from terrorist groups in Yemen. Our prayers and thoughts go out to all the families involved.
Hegel said further details of the attempt to rescue Corky and Summers would be released later.
It was a very dangerous and complicated mission, but like always in these efforts, there's risk.
Gillian Parker for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Outgoing U.S. Defense Secretary Hagel says an additional 1,000 U.S. troops will stay in Afghanistan during the first few months of 2015. At a news conference in Kabul today, Hagel said the move by the U.S. changes an earlier plan to cut troop levels to 9,800 by the end of the year. He told reporters he had confidence in Afghan security forces having the capacity to defend the capital from ongoing attacks, but there will now be 10,800 troops set to stay, and they will still be scaled back to 5,500 by the year 2016. This is VOA News. Pakistani officials say government forces killed a top al-Qaeda leader wanted in the U.S. for a 2009 plot to attack the New York subway system. In a statement, the military said Adnan Shukri Juma was killed in an early morning raid today in South Waziristan. Two of his accomplices are also dead. The U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation has had the Saudi on their most wanted terrorist list and was offering up to $5 million for his capture. U.S. prosecutors allege that Shukri Juma planned to use weapons of mass destruction in blowing up the New York subway system. President Barack Obama has nominated former Deputy Pentagon Chief Ashton Carter as his next Secretary of Defense.
With a record of service that has spanned more than 30 years as a public servant, as an advisor, as a scholar, Ash is rightly regarded as one of our nation's foremost national security leaders.
Ashton, or Ash Carter, is a former Rhodes Scholar, a physicist and high-tech weapons expert who served as Deputy Defense Secretary from 2011 to 2013. Before that, he was the Pentagon's top weapons buyer for 2 years. He's said to have bipartisan support in Washington, which will be very important when the Senate becomes Republican-led. 500,000 people in the Philippines have evacuated coastal villages and landslide-prone areas ahead of a powerful typhoon. Red Cross official Richard Gordon says Typhoon Hagupit is expected to cover 700 kilometers.
It's going to be rain and floods and landslides and all that. There's a whole full-service menu that is being served by nature. They can even remobilize the lahars of Mayon volcano and even as far as Canlaon.
The storm has weakened as it moved across the Pacific Ocean on Friday, but it is still expected to be the strongest storm this season to hit the Philippines. The International Criminal Court withdrew crimes against humanity charges against Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta on Friday, citing a lack of evidence, but the prosecutor says she is not giving up. VOA's Gabe Joslow reports.
ICC lead prosecutor Fatou Bensouda said Friday there is not enough evidence to prove the charges against Mr. Kenyatta beyond a reasonable doubt. Bensouda said Kenya's government failed to provide key documents to the prosecution, which undermined her investigations and had a severe adverse impact on the case. President Kenyatta was charged for his alleged role before he was president in the inter-ethnic violence that followed the 2007 Kenyan elections, leaving 1,100 people dead. Mr. Kenyatta's deputy, William Ruto, still faces charges at the ICC for similar crimes. Gabe Joslow, Nairobi.
President Obama will meet with Britain's Prince William, the Duke of Cambridge, in the Oval Office on Monday during the prince's first visit to Washington. The British royal is traveling to the United States with his wife, the Duchess of Cambridge. Kate, as she is known, is pregnant with the couple's second child and not scheduled to join her husband at the White House. I'm Marty Johnson reporting.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
Today, I have to withdraw the charges against Mr. Kenyatta. And this means that this case is not, at least for now, going to proceed.
The International Criminal Court drops charges against Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta.
I think this is time really for us as Africans to make sure that we show the solidarity. I think this solidarity message should continue.
A top African Union special envoy plans to lead a delegation to meet with mothers of the abducted Chibok schoolgirls in Nigeria on Sunday. We'll have details.
Those resources will directly go to the family. And when women are given added income or able to raise more food, that directly relates to the children and the education and the nutrition of the child.
And five U.S. universities partner with Ethiopian schools on research and development projects. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The prosecutor of the International Criminal Court, or ICC, says victims of Kenya's 2007 to 2008 post-election violence will not be forgotten, even though charges against Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta have been dropped. Prosecutor Fatou Bensouda withdrew crimes against humanity charges against Mr. Kenyatta, citing witness intimidation, harassment, and the failure of Kenya's government to meaningfully cooperate with the Hague-based court. Bensouda told me earlier that she is hopeful that survivors of the violence would appreciate the work her team put into the investigation and filing of charges against Kenyatta.
We brought charges against Mr. Kenyatta in order to address the post-election violence that took place in 2007-2008 in Kenya. There are several victims for the crimes that took place in that period, and our attempts were to address those crimes and the persons who are alleged to be responsible for those crimes. Today, I have to withdraw the charges against Mr. Kenyatta, and this means that this case is not, at least for now, going to proceed. In a way, I think this is a denial of justice to the victims of these crimes. And this is why I say that it is a dark day for international criminal justice. There are several reasons why we had to withdraw the charges. One of them is lack of cooperation of the government of Kenya. Another one is the intimidation of witnesses for them not to be able to come forward to give us their evidence.
But what do you tell victims of the post-election violence in Kenya about your decision based on these challenges to withdraw these charges temporarily, as you put it, against President Kenyatta?
I believe that the victims will appreciate the fact that we have done our best to ensure that justice is done in this case. And the fact that we are confronted with these challenges is really the reason why the charges are being withdrawn. And no other reason, not because we do not want to do justice in this case.
No,
but we can only proceed with this case based on the evidence that we have. I have always said that.
Well, Ms. Bensouda, what do you say to people who express concern that the evidence that you see could be destroyed now that the charges have been temporarily destroyed because of what they call the power of the presidency in Kenya, so the chances of resuscitating this case could be negligible? What do you say to that?
Well, you don't know. We don't know. That is a possibility, but there is also another possibility of motivating people to give us information, more information. We don't know. That is why I have said that the conditions that exist today in Kenya makes it very difficult for my office to realistically continue to investigate properly and effectively. But we will continue to receive any information that we have, and we will assess that information to know what are the next steps that we will take. I am not able to speculate about what will happen in the future, but this is the plan that we have in the office. We will continue still to receive information, to analyze that information, to assess it, and to determine what are the next steps that we're going to take.
Critics say that the court appeared to be in a haste to prosecute a sitting head of state, albeit a so-called big man in Africa, without necessarily gathering all the evidence that will make sure justice is administered to the victims of the post-election violence. What do you say to these critics?
I think these critics are wrong. I think we need to step back a little, go back in time, and to see where all this started. We did not indict a sitting head of state. This has to be clear. We never indicted a sitting head of state. We indicted a citizen of Kenya in his personal capacity when he was not even running for office as president. So this is really not correct to say that we are in a hurry to indict a sitting head of state. And furthermore, people have to recollect that when this case was brought before the ICC judges and the evidence was presented to them that these persons are suspected to be most responsible for these crimes, the judges confirmed the charges. This is important. We should not forget that. And it was after the confirmation of those charges that we are continuing with our case. But what is also important to note is that the evidence that we had has changed. The evidence that we gathered, that we presented to the judges to prepare for trial, has been eroded because of the difficulties that we faced in this court, the lack of cooperation or the lack of meaningful cooperation, the interference with the witnesses, the harassment, terrifying witnesses to come forward. This is what has changed our evidence from what it was at the beginning of this case. As I said, we did not indict a sitting president when we started this case.
Fatou Bensouda is the prosecutor of the International Criminal Court, or the ICC. She spoke with me from The Hague. Meanwhile, rights advocates say the decision by the ICC to drop charges against Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta is a blow to international justice. They say it is also a setback for the Hague-based court, which has convicted only two people in its 12-year history. For VOA, Lisa Brand takes a look at the implications from Paris.
The decision to drop charges against President Uhuru Kenyatta was announced Friday in a short written statement by the International Criminal Court's chief prosecutor. Fatou Bensouda blamed the Kenyan government for failing to provide what she called crucial assistance. She also cited other roadblocks, including allegedly false media reports and efforts to intimidate would-be witnesses. Her statement came 2 days after ICC judges gave prosecutors a week to either strengthen their case or drop their charges against Kenya's president. Mr. Kenyatta faced crimes against humanity charges for allegedly masterminding post-election violence that killed more than 1,000 people in Kenya in late 2007 and early 2008. Mr. Kenyatta and his supporters are cheering the outcome as a vindication of his innocence. But rights advocates like Human Rights Watch's Liz Evanson see it as a setback for justice and for Kenya's victims.
That's why it becomes important to really take a close look here at what happened and what could have been done to bring about cooperation, what could have been done to make sure witnesses felt protected, what could have been done to counter the Kenyan government's propaganda against the court, which had a real impact on these cases because it made people in Kenya less willing to cooperate with the court.
Evanson says the court's decision may spur more action from other nations that are part of the ICC.
Was there a way in which the international community could have reacted to back up the court, to stress with Kenya the importance of cooperation? Some of those efforts were made, but was enough done?
Since coming into force in 2002, the ICC has concluded only 3 cases, including one it wrapped up earlier this week against Congolese warlord Thomas Lubanga. Some criticize it for acting too slowly, and many Africans believe it unfairly singles out African cases for prosecution, a criticism that the ICC rejects. Like Evanson, European Council on Foreign Relations rights specialist Anthony Dworkin believes there are lessons to be learned in the Kenyatta case.
This was, to some degree, I think, a failure of prosecution strategy, along with clearly a case where the country involved wasn't cooperating. But it doesn't in any way, I think, indicate that the court shouldn't go after political leaders. It just depends on the evidence of the case. The lesson is that the court has to move very carefully, particularly in these sensitive cases, to make sure that it has a solid base of evidence to pursue the charges that it wants to pursue.
The court has not acquitted Mr. Kenyatta, which means charges could be pursued in the future if there's more evidence. Meanwhile, an ICC trial continues for Kenya's vice president, William Ruto, who is also charged with organizing post-election violence. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
The African Union's Special Envoy for Women, Peace and Security says she will lead a delegation to meet with mothers of the abducted Chibok girls in Nigeria. Militants from the violent Islamist group Boko Haram kidnapped over 200 schoolgirls in Chibok 235 days ago. Benita Diop says one of the objectives of her trip to Nigeria is to echo the voices of the women and support their efforts to bring to an end the ordeal of the Chibok girls and other forms of gender-based violence. For more, I read Ms. Diop in the Ethiopian capital Addis Ababa earlier today and asked about the details.
I think it's time for me as the special envoy of the chairperson of the African Union Commission, Madam Zuma, to go and meet with the mothers and the women of the North to show solidarity. You know, in my mandate, I've been visiting Central African Republic. I have visited just last week the Somalia, and I continue. And I think this is time really for us as Africans to make sure that we show the solidarity. I think this solidarity message should continue until we get what we are requesting and what the women of the North are requesting is peace and stability in their region. So we are supporting them, and this is the strong message I will carry when I go to Nigeria.
Will it be a strong message as well to support the government effort to ensure peace and stability and the protection of unarmed civilians? Will there be a strong message to the government to help in its attempt to restore law and order in that part of the country?
I think that we need to recognize efforts, any efforts that have been done, either by the government or the military, to address this issue of peace and security. But a lot needs to be done more. I think that the message is a message to encourage them, but also to ask that in the region, really, that our government be together and do more. And I think that what the 200 girls that have been abducted is really something that nobody can see, tolerate, or continue to tolerate, and the abduction continue. So what we are saying is that the denial to the girl, even for the education, something need to be done. I know that in the region of the Chad, the Lake Chad, there are a lot of work done by member states there, supported by the African Union. But we are saying that the impact of this conflict on the women is too much, on the mothers. So solutions have to be found. And we think that, the government should put more efforts. We are supporting their efforts, but they should do more effort to bring peace and stability in the, you know, Nigeria have done a lot for countries like Liberia, Sierra Leone. You know, our military went there and fixed, helped the countries to bring peace. So we think that Nigeria is able to do that. And myself, I'm from West Africa. I think that if Nigeria collapses, the West Africa will collapse. So we need to not just look into the plight on the population, but we need to look at how the region can really work within the ECOWAS, within the African Union, to bring peace and stability in the north of Nigeria.
The issue of galvanizing support of civil society organizations, specifically in Nigeria, to undertake a series of activities through working with victims of terrorism, how will you bring them into this fold as part of your visit to Nigeria Sunday?
We think that civil society have to play a big role in restoring peace and stability in the country. We have seen how it happened in many other countries, not just Liberia. I quote them in West Africa, in Central Africa Republic. You know, anywhere you see conflict, Rwanda, Burundi, civil society have to come at the forefront, but also in the reconstruction. Because we know the international community, where there is peace, they will go. And stabilization have to be done by government, but in particular, the people that are on the ground is the civil society. So we will support them. And the group that is important also is the upcoming election, how women can prevent violence. So the message will be supporting women's network, also to create something that have been working other places, like in Senegal, which we call the Women's Situation Room, where they will be monitoring violence in the election. They will be monitoring the polls. They will be monitoring what the parties are doing, and they will denounce. They will build alliances with the media to say stop to violence.
Benita Diop is the African Union Special Envoy for Women, Peace and Security. She spoke with me from the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. Members of the Ugandan parliament are reportedly planning to reintroduce and pass the anti-homosexual bill. Drafters of a revised anti-gay law want parliament to pass it in weeks after a controversial earlier version was quashed because of legal technicalities. Charles Impaji is a political editor at the Daily Monitor, an independent Ugandan newspaper. My colleague Douglas Impuga reached him in the Ugandan capital, Kampala, to find out whether this bill will be indeed introduced and how soon that will be.
The soon is the question we are not certain about, but that they have always had an intention to bring it back. Both the original sponsor, MP David Bahati, the Speaker of Parliament, who enabled it through Parliament, Rebecca Kadaga, have all indicated that they wanted the bill back. And you remember shortly after it was struck down by the court, there was an intense effort by almost all MPs to mobilize and get signatures for their colleagues who had missed out the sitting, which was the main reason the law was pushed out.
There seems to be bipartisan support for this bill, so we assume it will pass Parliament.
I would be hesitant to call it bipartisan. I would call it a very populist kind of law that was initially debated based on emotions and emotional conservatism by the people. And yes, the campaign to find signatures of members to try and push the speaker to have it retabled in parliament was a very bipartisan affair, with members from all parties, from all religious backgrounds, joining in and trying to say that the bill needed to be put back, debated again and passed properly.
According to reports of the leak of the draft bill, is it the same as the law that was nullified?
Fundamentally, yes, because even the one that was nullified by court didn't go into the substance of the bill. The court largely focused on its passage, the process that passed it, because Parliament did not have quorum. So once the section on the death sentence, an automatic death sentence, was removed, the rest of the bill remained fundamentally the same from what I hear.
Lastly, there was a lot of international condemnation and pressure over the bill that had been passed into law. Are the parliamentarians prepared for the international blowback?
That's the thing that we will watch to see how both the government, the ruling government, the nationalist movement, and the members of parliament respond to that. But as you might already be aware, or your listeners might be aware, this was a very populist or kind of attracted a lot of attention across the country from all walks of life. So being politicians, I think they're looking more at the domestic dividends than the international fallout. The international pressure will continue to bear on them in the decisions that they make.
Charles Impaji is the political editor at the Daily Monitor, an independent Ugandan newspaper. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Impuga from the capital, Kampala. The U.S. is awarding $15,000 grants to five U.S. universities that are partnering with Ethiopian schools on research and development projects. The initiative by the State Department and the Department of Education is designed to strengthen the skills of faculty and administrators in both countries. One grant awarded to the University of Maryland in Ethiopia's Debre Bihan University will be used to train Ethiopian women on how to grow crops as part of an effort to address food security. VOA State Department correspondent Pam Dawkins has the story.
Through classroom instruction and work on demonstration farms, the University of Maryland will provide training on how to grow food throughout the year with a goal of improving food security. University Technical Advisor Becky Ramsing says they hope to help women in Ethiopia who may have had limited access to training opportunities.
If you give the woman the resources, those resources will directly go to the family. And when women are given added income or able to raise more food, that directly relates to the children and to the education and the nutrition of the child.
She says the goal is to train staff members at Debre Bihan University who will then teach women in useful techniques such as growing food in small spaces.
Some of these women don't have access to land. How can we do container gardening, vertical gardening, livestock like small poultry?
Sige Mariam Bashay is a program facilitator and dean at Debre Bihan. She says an overall goal is empowerment.
Empowering women is empowering the whole population or empowering the society.
Debre Bihan facilitator Hailu Tarifa says only men are traditionally taught farming in some parts of the country.
There is cultural differences. In Ethiopia, all the regions do not have the same culture. There are regions that women are not allowed to go for agricultural practices.
Sige Mariam Bashay hopes the women who are trained will in turn assist other women.
I hope in the near future, women in the project become a community educator.
The other U.S. university grant recipients are Brown, Bowling Green State, Ball State, and the University of North Texas Libraries. Pam Dawkins, VOA News, the State Department.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth discussion on the continent's fight against terrorist groups, Boko Haram and Al-Shabaab. That's next time on VOA Africa.
Sports fans, this is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. Please join me Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. And on Fridays, you can also hear my 30-minute show at 17:30 UTC. On the internet, like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Check voaafrica.com for the addresses and enjoy the show.
And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent, then we'll have commentary by Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University. And right now it's time for music from our African collection. Enjoy.
Ladies, it's
Don't stop till you get enough. Big my cross. Don't stop till you get enough.
One day it's like a dango.
You are savage, roll a mo. Don't be picky, roll a mo. Even Nelson, roll a mo. Have your man. Even Nelson, have your medicine. Even Nelson, have your medicine. My waist, all he wants is my waist, he wants my figure eight.
My waist,
all he wants is my waist, he wants my figure eight. Don't stop till you get enough. Big Macusa,
don't stop till you get enough.
Say,
body waist like a dangola. Baby, bring my booty closer. The way that you want it from me, oh, she make me want my money, oh. And whenever she give it to me, oh, give it to me, now she give it to me, oh. The way that she want it from me, oh, she make me want my money, oh. The way that she give it to me, when you give it to me. Oh.
Damn, let's say, hey, no man can cause it.
Make them music.
Now the Osprey D and Ovid
Diamond.
Big tunes on the beat.
Let me come with the player, what was this bass here?
Now this channel is not saying so much. Let's see them, all the girls they must come now. Let them, with the governors, make them all one time.
Take it. Feel it.
All my ladies.
It's the remix.
All my ladies.
And the lunch.
Come to
master.
Take it.
Cook any master. Two masters.
It's me, I am the banjo. I get the money, oh.
Ukere.
Well, let me rock you, oh.
Sangere.
See me early morning, oh.
Sangere.
Oh, na, 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 na.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, oh yeah, oh yeah, let's go. I get too much money for escrow. Oh my God. Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh my, let's go. I get too much money for escrow. Oh yeah, oh my God. From Lagos to London, she shake a bam bam. You know, say, oh, you both pepper sweet. From New York to Hong Kong, chong chong. One come to be in Domi. When I ride to the club in my Aston Martin, girls getting nasty after Remy Martin. Chilling in VIP, we talk about Remy Martin. Oh man, we get the money, we just spend the money with the cookie, the cookie, the cookie, the cookie, the cookie, the cookie.
I get the money, oh, cookie, oh, cookie. Well, I rock you, sangre, sangre, sangre. Till the early morning, oh, sangre, sangre, sangre. Na na na. They're rocking to the early morning. All your friends, them better come and come. Yes, go see Star Wars fun. I'm a Dunkalian, come get some. I'm on the run, enemies them fire bun. So God damn bless it. No man can cross it. You say, you say. Ale, ale, ale. Ukele, ukele, ukele. I get the money. Ukele, ukele, ukele. Well, I'm going to rock you. Sangre, sangre, sangre. Sangre, sangre, sangre. Sangre, sangre, sangre.
But anytime when she come around, she get this feeling where they do me like fever. And when she dance with my mess, boo, he dey be me like Senna for Panda. Me like how she play the bass line, it makes me sing ooh la la la. The way she the way she dance, it makes me sing ooh la la la. Oh yeah. When mommy come back, she a drop. Daddy come to me a cross. And when they ask me, it wasn't me. That's what me dog say. I don't like this shirt, but your body. But you know say, my mama don't like that. I don't want this shirt touching body. Cause you don't say my papa no like them. Listen up. Oh na 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 na. Oh na 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 na. Oh na 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 na. Oh na 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 na.
Ale pega o sertão, mamo bate, mato lá cada, bate uma wanga, uma coro. Se nem bem, nem bem.
Like
Now she play the best line. It makes me sing ooh la la la. The way she the way she that. It makes me sing ooh la la la. Oh yeah. The moment me come back, she a jump. Daddy come to me a cross. And when they ask me, it was me. That's why me talk say, I don't like this shirt. Touching body. Cause you know say, my mama no like her. I don't want this shirt. Touching body. Cause you know say, my papa no like her. Oh na 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 na. Oh na 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 na. Oh na 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 na. Oh na 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 na. Imara so sunny, akwina nu. Ooh, maki fi ne me bu spiritual healing. Amina, shalewa. However. Don't try me, cause if you try, I go do many things. If you don't doubt me, don't try me, cause if you try, I go do many things. Like how she play the best line. It makes me sing ooh la la la. The way she the way she that. It makes me sing ooh la la la. Oh yeah. When mommy come back, she a jump. Daddy come to me a cross. And when they ask me, it was me. That's why me talk say, I don't like this girl touching body. Cause you know say, my mama don't like them. I don't want this shirt touching body. Cause no say my papa no like them. Cause no say my papa no like them. Oh na 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 na.
Sugar CC, yeah. You look so kinky tonight. I should keep on easy. It's Lanyan, baby, yo. My loving Diana, my love is here to stay. Lickan lady, oh my. Better, better, my style. Did they light my fire? And I know my fire for you, eh. Oh my. Better, better, my style. Did they light my fire? And I know my fire for you, eh. My CC, yo, baby. Make you give me your fine, fine. Your sweet, sweet loving, baby. I make you kiss me. Your fine, fine loving. Your sweet, sweet loving, baby. I like your style. You just sweet me, I sweet just smile. See the way where you just shine, shine. Nobody oh, you go good way. Make me cross papa, mama, and blessing go the flow. Shine, we go just stay go. Plenty, plenty my style. Eat it like my fire. And I know my fire for you, eh. Oh my, plenty, plenty nice fire. Eat it like my fire. And I know good fire for you, eh. My sissy, oh baby, make you give me your fine, fine loving, your sweet, sweet loving, baby. Make you give me your fine, fine loving, your sweet, sweet loving. Love it, baby. I make you give me your fine, fine love.
Cause it is written of it. It's a movie naga. It's a movie naga. I see Munagi gave you.
Take more dance.
Come on, personally, I rock your body. I promise to go home, you won't tell daddy. I give it to you like you never had it. Swimming, church, like speaking Chinese. Now waiting with this, like a boom boom. Now waiting, as Saga, she know what me. She talks, so she know what me.
I know go lie, the things within my mind. When I see you dancing, girl, you got me high. And if you wanna try, make a good day tonight. I'm in the mood, as long as I'm feeling the groove, I deal with you.
Personally, 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 personally,
I go deal with you.
Personally, 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 personally,
I go deal with you.
Personally, professionally, I see what you're doing intentionally. Get me wanted physically, so give it to me radically. Emotionally, psychologically, you're turning me on biologically. Sexually, dramatically, I just talk so she know what I mean.
I know go lie, the things within my mind. When I see you dancing, girl, you got me high. And if you wanna try, make a good day tonight. Cause I'm in the mood, as long as you're feeling the groove, I go deal with.
Personally, personal, personally, personally, personal, personally,
I go deal with you.
Personally, personal, personally, personally, personal, personally,
I go deal with you. I go deal with you.
Yeah, exceptionally. Reason is spiritually, money speaking so drastically, magically, internationally, Abba, abatically, drama, not for dictionary, Saga, so she know what me, she talks so she know what me.
I know go lie, the things within my mind, when I see you dancing, girl, you got me high, and if you wanna try, make a good day tonight, cause I'm in the mood, as long as you're feeling the groove, I go deal with you.
Personally, 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 personally,
I go deal with you.
Personally, 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 personally,
I go deal with you.
That was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. It's now time for commentary and analysis by Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University here in Washington. Take it away, Dr. Nyang.
Hello, Africa. It's always a pleasure for me to share my reflections on American foreign policy towards Africa. In doing so, I pay close attention to the headlines and to see what the Africans themselves are doing. And here I looked at African opinions on and attitudes toward the United States. This week, we look back on American relations with Africa. You can look at the recent developments which occupy the attention of many Africans who are looking at the United States. A couple of months ago, President Obama assembled a large number of African leaders in Washington. The whole world looked at Africa in Washington. Now historians, political analysts, bloggers, telecasters, journalists in America and overseas talk about the Africa Summit during the Obama period. Much was written about this period. If you go to Google, you'll find millions of references to different things done by Africans looking at America. African newspapers and magazines, African televisions focus on that because their heads of states were in America. Now, when we look back, we can see how history moved rapidly into an order domain of experience for the Africans. What is that? Unfortunately, Ebola as a disease seizing West Africa, Guinea, Liberia, Sierra Leone became the theater of operation, and African leaders from these countries were caught in a fix. How can you govern a sick people? And that was why the African leaders looked across the Atlantic to the United States. And America's relations with Africa took a new form. President Obama visited Africa at the very beginning of his presidency with joy and hope and glory. The audacity of hope was projected in Africa, going to Ghana, which was necessary because Kwame Nkrumah was the first African leader who came to the United States during the Kennedy administration. Africa was yearning for freedom, good governance, and prosperity. Unfortunately, when we look back, since that time, the African continent is still struggling, trying to address an issue the late Ali Mazrui saw when he went to do the Africans. And of course, from the 1980s to now, over 30 years ago, the African leaders are still trying to go to the village, as Mazrui reported in the Africans. Today, the African villages are not only facing problem of poverty, which is the number one enemy of humanity. If Jesus of Nazareth were to tell his disciples, I'm going to give you 2,000 years to live into another generation, and those disciples and apostles will be coming to America or Africa, what will be most remarkable is the fact that if he were to give each of the apostles $2 a day for 2,000 years, Jesus would not have spent $80 million. From that time to now, lo and behold, many of Africa's leaders are running up around trying to be billionaires when their own people don't have even $2 a day. That's the great indictment from the biblical narrative to the leadership today. When people are not able to get $2 a day, they are woefully crippled by diseases. During the pre-colonial period, the mosquito was a problem. West Africa was called the white man's grave. Hundreds, if not thousands of Europeans died. But through science and technology, we discovered quinine and solved that problem. Today, when we look back at U.S.-Africa relations, we see poverty, poverty, poverty as the number one problem. The other problem is disease, disease, disease. So if there is going to be meaningful relationship, there must be some serious economic programs on both sides of the Atlantic. 700 years ago, 600 years ago, 500 years ago, we have this slave trade. In the African-American narrative, we call it the Middle Passage. So this is one of the reasons why when we talk about American-African relations, the economy is stupid becomes the number one question. The African leaders have to pay close attention to the economy. How can you create the structure so that your people in the village are able to produce agriculture unhindered by any bureaucratic rule or lack of transparency and corruption, so they can get their produce from their villages to the seaports or their villages to an industrial center where their products can be produced? This is the new challenge to American leadership who are interested in Africa. They must support the Africans who want democracy and get rid of all these dictatorships, so that the Africans themselves will have a new beginning. From the time of independence to now, they have a new day. The young people definitely would like to have villages where they are free to live like their ancestors, but under changing times, so that they can have science and technology as their companion. And that's the way it is. If the Obama administration can do anything in the next 2 years, it must engage the young Africans who want to have new democracies. And those young Africans must not be too emotional. They must learn to budget their emotions and engage themselves to see to it that they have leaders who are not corrupt running them, leaders who are not driven by glory and materialism, but leaders who are able to govern themselves. They have to learn from the lessons of George Washington. You come to power, serve your time, bye-bye, go home, and start a new day. That's the message America has for Africa today. That is the legacy that people like Ali Mazrui try to do, Wole Soyinka try to do for the Nigerians, Chinua Achebe try to do for the Nigerians with his trouble of Nigeria. The Nigerians have to wake up and listen to these people who didn't want to be ambassadors, governors, ministers, or even presidents. They use their pens to educate their people. These are the legacies of Socrates, the legacies of Jesus Christ, legacies of Muhammad and all others, Buddha and all other people who never used power to govern. They use their tongue and their pen to change the minds of the depressed, the helpless, and the hopeless human beings. That's the message we have today for Africa.
Thank you very much, Dr. Nyang. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sali, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, John Dryden, we say a big thanks for joining us tonight. And remember, as elders in Gambia say, if the only tool you have is a hammer, you will see every problem as a nail. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S.-led coalition's strategy to degrade and defeat the terrorist group ISIL is working, said U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry. Speaking before representatives of 60 contributing countries, Secretary Kerry said that since the coalition began operations 2.5 months ago, ISIL's momentum has been halted.
Some of those modifications are severely hampering their ability to operate in the way that they were, certainly. That their hold on territory has been challenged already, and their finances have been strained, and in almost every media market that exists, and certainly within the region, their message is being denounced. Their message of hate is being challenged in public meeting places and mosques across the globe.
The coalition is using a multifaceted approach, and while the military aspects, particularly the airstrikes, are the most visible part, a military response alone is not the answer, said Secretary Kerry. Destroying ISIL is going to require defeating the ideology, the funding, the recruitment, and the devastation that they've been able to inflict on the people in the region, he said. And key to the coalition's success is long-term stability in Iraq. Nothing will do more to defeat ISIL than an Iraq that is united and has more representative and effective security forces, said Secretary Kerry. In that respect, much still needs to be done. But Iraqi Prime Minister Haider Abadi has already started the ball rolling by taking numerous steps